It's Jim Cramer here. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street. Don't miss a minute of the action.
Good Thursday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer, David Faber at the New York Stock Exchange. Futures just south of the flat line after the first back-to-back 1% declines of the year for the S&P. Everyone's on watch, as Joe says, for ISM services in an hour, which did fall into contraction in the UK. Europe is mixed right now. 10-year yield close to a one-month low. Jobless claims tick up slightly to 219K. Our roadmap begins with Red October. Stocks off to their worst start to a fourth quarter since the crisis. Futures point to another lower open.
Plus, after the worst reading on manufacturing in a decade, investors awaiting a key read on the services sector. That's coming this morning.
And shares of PepsiCo popping ahead of the bell, fueled by sales growth and a nice earnings beat. CFO Hugh Johnston is going to join us first on CNBC in just a few minutes. Markets having a rough time shaking off the jitters amid signs of an economic slowdown. A second straight sell-off resulted in the Dow falling more than 800 points in the past 2 days. S&P lost 63% of its gains from Q2 and Q3 combined. Investors will be paying close attention to services data in less than an hour from now. Jim, SocGen, I think, says of the two times that ISM manufacturing's contracted, we haven't had a recession because services held in.
Well, last night I had Marty Musi on from Paychex. Now, Paychex is a small, medium-sized business, and as my old colleague Larry Kudlow, now the chief economic advisor to the president, said, that is where the job growth comes. I mean, it's not like GM creates a lot of jobs. And he said that this is one of the best times they've ever had. And that September was a very strong month in the country and was constrained because of not being able to find more employees. And it's kind of like there's just two worlds here. Like Marty's talking about an acceleration in the economy and that we would have tremendous job growth if there were more people. And then we've got the other part of the economy, which is, you know, the car loadings of rails and the air transports and manufacturing, which is just not good. And the former, the Marty Musi Paychex, is who spends. It's who's buying houses. Lennar was one of the best quarters I've ever seen Lennar have. And they're the largest home builder. So there are things that are happening in the economy that are incredibly strong. And there are things that are happening that are incredibly weak. And I don't want to just focus on the part that's weak. Because Marty Musi was saying, Jim, everybody's way too gloomy.
Yeah. Yesterday, Credit Suisse called it the fears of a semi-recession. Because so much of the industrial economy is weak, as you said, and the rest is not. This is what the Paychex CEO told Jim last night on Mad Money.
My feeling is that while businesses are a little bit concerned overall about the economy, the demand for their products is still there, and they're out trying to hire. The biggest challenge is hiring people to fill the demand that they have. That's good news.
That's unbelievable. I mean, it's funny. Sometimes you talk with executives after the camera's over, and I just say, listen, Marty, I'd really like to check my bullishness here because I know it's important to be reasoned. And he said, look, the issue in this country is we need more workers. Now, that's typically not the recession narrative. The recession narrative is we have a surplus of workers. That's not the case. So I felt very sanguine after speaking to Marty. And also, for background, the people in Lennar, they can't build the homes fast enough. So you've got that part of the economy, 10% of the economy is housing, but it does a punch above its weight. And you find yourself thinking, before I get too bearish, remember that these are the people who buy things. And that's why watch Walmart, Amazon, Target, Costco, and Home Depot remains very strong. The Lennar chart is a chart of the U.S. economy. And when you speak to the president's people, yes, I do, they're like in disbelief that we don't think it's great that they put $7.5 billion in tariffs on Europe. Because a guy like Marty Musi will say, listen, the tariffs are impacting only 25% of the businesses that we have, of which 75% of the 25 say there's no issue.
Going into the crisis, our viewers will remember being told that housing, a small part of the economy, don't worry too much. Now we're being told, oh, it's reflective of the entire economy.
I think that's a great point. And I think the difference is when I remember when Bob Toll came on, Toll at that point, very big part of that, of what was going on. He was talking about housing flips and how he was grading his areas, and there were just way too many areas that are hot. Here, it's kind of the opposite. It's that there is some home buying for rental. That is a Jonathan Gray issue. you know, in terms of real estate allocation.
President of Blackstone, yeah.
But I do think that, again, when I say
and
that
the
they...
the largest homeowner, right? They've these are had it.
The single family... There's a demographic movement out of the parents' home, and it's finally happening. It's in two waves. I know it's an overused term, but millennials are finally getting off the couch. I was sick of them being at home, as frankly as it is. I mean, you have to make meals for them. They don't really work hard. They snack. That's why Pepsi had a good quarter. They like to snack.
Got to go to Trader Joe's.
No, you got to go to the
snacks.
You got to get those new Red Hot Doritos. That's yeah. as we when we you talk know, to you,
you
not
it's,
you.
It's
that I'm
point.
From Philadelphia. You is different from
I'm
you.
I'm moving on now. It's a fair point that you're making about the economy, but yeah. During the course of a day, when you and I are talking to people or doing
right.
our job, or you're here or we're there, the trade war comes up every single time.
Right, but
right?
we
yesterday having lunch, and I passed somebody who is a director on. She's actually a director on three or four major boards, and we were talking about it. That uncertainty, that inability to want to actually allocate more capital than would be typically the case because you simply don't know where things stand right now. That's going on, and that's having a real impact.
Yeah, look, I
and
think...
it has an impact far beyond just the manufacturing sector.
Okay, well, I would tell you, why do you think the stock market's been getting clobbered? Because of that.
Right.
So, I mean, it's being reset, recognition that some companies are getting hurt. Now, the directors that are on the boards of some of the companies I deal with, they're saying, like, what's the problem? We're domestic. We've built in our Dollar Tree, the Dollar Trees.
All right. But then why is the Russell down 12% from the last high? Why is it no higher now than it was in September of 2017?
I think there's a lot of money coming out of the market because a lot of people feel it has to roll over. I think there's a very big fear factor. The fear factor, again, overdone, I think, but Elizabeth Warren. If Bernie Sanders does have health issues, Elizabeth Warren jumps to the fore. And there are people out there who believe that Elizabeth Warren is, quite frankly, a redistributionist. I think she is. I think she can be tempered, but you try to temper.
Cashin said 200 points of the selling yesterday, he thought, was a Sanders sell-off.
I couldn't agree more.
I mean,
couldn't agree more.
Do you remember a year out from the election, the market reacting in any way to the expectation of either Trump, or obviously he was not expected at that point to win? It just seems a bit far out to be discounting back
Why?
The probability of a Warren victory before the first primary has even begun.
I have agreed with you, but there, when I read the lead story, well, second to the right of the New York Times yesterday, about how Elizabeth Warren basically wants to redistribute how wealth is in this country, as is Bernie Sanders. I hear, you know, your directors, you talk about tariffs. My directors talk about Warren.
No, we've talked about this already many times. In fact,
you think it's wrong to keep talking about it?
When we do, because then she'll take the segment and tweet it out and say, see, they're
sure.
afraid of me.
But your point.
It does come up almost every time.
Medicare for all.
You have lunch with somebody or talk to somebody.
Boosting top marginal tax rates,
right.
wealth tax, raising capital gains tax, dividend tax. I mean, we all know what you're talking about, Jim.
Yeah.
Yeah. But maybe it's universal bad. Child care and health care.
No, look.
Some other universal things.
I'm trying.
Well, I don't know.
I have tried to talk executives off the ledge because I think that Senator Warren, in my belief, can be less of a fear factor, so to speak.
She can be tempered. She does seem to view corporate America as just bad.
She, if you look at her, I'm not going to disagree.
And that's where I wonder.
I'm not disagree.
You know, she didn't go in feeling that way, but
no,
somewhere
no.
along the way.
Well, I think she's emboldened. But what I was hoping is that, frankly, if Bernie Sanders does drop out, she doesn't have to worry about that flank anymore.
But, I think most observers suggest she'll vault way ahead of Biden in at least Iowa and New Hampshire.
I think that's true.
So you're hoping she does the politically right thing in terms of actually bolstering her candidacy in the general election, should she actually be the nominee. By moving more to the center.
My hope means nothing. I don't hope for anything.
No.
I hope for the Eagles to beat the Jets. That's about as close as what I hope for.
I think that hope could very easily be realized.
It could be a trap game. I'm just saying that you have the people who are the Wall Street people who live in fear and shake because of Elizabeth Warren. What?
Nothing. Let's get back to the trade war.
Oh, you want the trade war? All right. All right. You see this? Do we have a camera?
That's what they're worried about.
Do we have a camera? You know what this is? This is an Hermes tie, and they gave this an exemption. David, this tie is worth more than the apartment you live in.
That tie is made in China?
No, it's French tie.
So why would it need an exemption?
It got an exemption from the World Trade Organization, what the president did.
That.
So we have a president, and he put $7.5 billion.
I know.
Yeah, and they exempted Hermès. And by the way, my Italian wine and olive oil, exempted. It's about me, David. It's all about me.
In that way, you're very similar to the president.
When we come back, PepsiCo shares are aiming for a fresh record high, better than expected results. So we're going to talk growth strategy, advertising budgets with CFO Hugh Johnston in a first on CNBC interview in a moment. As we said, futures do suggest a third day of declines, but that most important number of the day is about 50 minutes away. ISM services, don't go away.
Shares of PepsiCo are popping ahead of the bell, maybe even as much as 2%. Higher advertising spending from the beverage and snack giant helped fuel sales growth and an earnings beat. Joining us now first on CNBC is PepsiCo Vice Chairman and CFO Hugh Johnston. He's a member of the CNBC Global CFO Council. Hugh, always good to see you. Thank you for coming on Squawk on the Street.
Great to see you as well, Jim. Good morning.
Or let's get right to it. There are a lot of people here who say that basically you did not raise forecast. But I look like that. I see that you pivoted toward a higher growth rate than Wall Street expected. And to me, that means, particularly against a very tough quarter, that you really are being rosier than Wall Street thought.
Yeah, Jim, I would agree with that. As you noted earlier this year, we really made a move to pivot towards higher growth, investing back in the business in a much more significant way than we had previously. And we're doing it across the board, advertising and marketing, our selling capability, our manufacturing capability. All of that money is going back into the business with the goal of accelerating our growth for both us and for our customers. And frankly, it's working really well right now. We've seen it over the course of multiple quarters at this point. We're seeing it across a broad base of businesses. So we really feel good about the third quarter and how the year has gone so far. And that's why we raised our revenue guidance for the full year, because as we look at things, we do see a positive picture.
All right. So, you know, I walk the aisles in the supermarket. To me, it seems like the aisle that is carbonated, you picked up share against Coca-Cola. The aisle that is Frito-Lay, it looks like you took maybe a couple yards of share with some of these new hot products. Is my square footage right?
Yeah, we're certainly doing better in terms of space in the market, both in terms of the aisles as well as the perimeter of the store as well, where a lot of the sales happen because our products are so impulse. I think what's happening more than anything is the increased advertising that we have is causing consumers to shop us more aggressively, and our customers are rewarding us with that space because they know that we can help them grow, and that's a big challenge for them. So the snack food business as well as the beverage business really have good momentum right now, competitively as well as supporting our customers.
You know, I hate to say this, but you and I are old-timers, and you remember the days when we used to focus on Gatorade and the growth in Gatorade and how important it is. Can that be happening again? I see very big numbers, Gatorade.
Yeah, I think we've got good momentum in that Gatorade business right now, and it's a combination of a couple of things. Number one, just the increased advertising level and the quality of the advertising, I think, that has picked up quite nicely as well. In addition to that, Gatorade Zero is just a terrific new product. It's the biggest zero-calorie isotonic in the marketplace by far, even though the product is just a little bit over a year old. And then in addition to that, we just launched Bolt 24, which is for athletes off the field of play, where they can actually meet their hydration needs all day long. And that product is off to a great start. So I'm very bullish on the Gatorade business right now. I think we've got terrific momentum there.
Hey, Hugh, speaking of advertising and marketing, do I have this figure right? Tracking up 12 for the year? And how long can you sustain that?
That's correct. Yeah, we've seen a nice pickup. Listen, as we see our sales accelerate, I think you'll see us continue to pour money into advertising and marketing because it's having the desired effect. And importantly, we're getting good returns on that advertising. Obviously, as the CFO, I watch that pretty closely. And we are seeing good positive financial results out of the increase in advertising, not just increased sales. So, yeah, 12% is correct, and I think we'll continue to increase at a good, healthy clip.
So your investor base seems to get it. Would you agree? I mean, you obviously have the increase in SG&A, but they're not concerned about it because it does seem to be driving that organic sales that you're talking about.
That's exactly right. The increase in SG&A is primarily driven by investments in selling capability to go along with our advertising and marketing increases as well. So the investor base understands putting money into these areas results in a stronger, more sustainable franchise. To put it in financial terms, it extends the duration of strong performance. So I think the investor base understands that. Combine that with the fact that we've got $1 billion productivity program going on this year. So we're reducing non-value-added costs and investing in costs that actually drive the success of the business. I think investors appreciate that, particularly in today's choppy and challenging environment for them.
Okay, you've got about 15 seconds. Everybody tells me the economy's slowing. Look out. How bad is it for PepsiCo?
You know, Jim, I can speak for our business, and what we see is a consumer that really likes our products and is buying them at an increasing rate. So as far as we can tell, the consumer is actually doing just fine right now.
Well, there you go. I mean, I know that we're supposed to be hanging ourselves, but looks like while we're hanging ourselves, we're still drinking PepsiCo and having a couple of snacks. Hugh Johnson, thank you so much. Great quarter from PepsiCo.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate
to be,
it.
Thank you. I struggle to be as negative when I know that these millennials, they like it hot. Some like it hot, David.
Nobody's perfect.
I was waiting for it. We'll get Cramer's Mad Dash countdown to the opening bell in a moment. Take one more look here at the pre-market on this busy Thursday. ISM services in 40 minutes. Don't go away. Take a look at FANG performance over the last 2 days. Netflix actually higher, the only one. Today, B of A says it's going to be a make-or-break quarter for Netflix.
Whoa.
As they have not missed on sub-guidance for two consecutive quarters. Opening bell in just about 8 minutes.
We're about 5 minutes from the opening bell. Let's get a mad dash. We're going to sit down today.
Right. David?
But it won't matter. You're still going to deliver. What do you got?
Well, David, you know what? It's really interesting. Clorox yesterday had an analyst meeting. It wasn't really talked about, mm-hmm. other than perhaps this morning J.P. Morgan lowered their price target, 143 down to 137. But here's what's interesting. This was a reset. Now, we saw the same thing with McCormick. They reset. That's, of course, the spice company, Frank's, Mustard. And then after they reset, they beat. I think Clorox is doing the same thing. I think they reset, and going forward, I think they beat. But they've got something new. You know, a lot of companies come up to me these days and say, listen, we've got hemp, we've got CBD, and they're all no-names. And I say to myself, do I want to use no-name CBD? Well, David, Burt's Bees is going to have CBD. And I think that's a good housekeeping seal of approval that's going to take share within the likes of the Walgreens aisles. So I like Clorox here after the reset. Benadryl doing a good job, stocks up a lot, but it's been weak lately because people don't like the Glad bag. They think the Glad bag, frankly, is very easily mimicked. But if they can do Burt's Bees CBD, it's going to be the buzz that, I didn't mean that. But the buzz that people need, because right now Lord Jones is the established brand, which is Cronos. But everyone wants to be CBD, and yet I don't trust, well, most people don't trust the brands. If right. they see the name,
cannabinoid,
Burt's
not
Bees.
THC, obviously. This is
no,
the things
no,
that you
not
put,
THC.
Rub on
99.9%
creams and things that you would put on to help.
Topical.
Right.
And I know that Larry Merlot,
yes,
by the way, Merlot included in the tariffs.
CVS CEO.
Yes. Wants to have a lot of CBD in his stores. Well, which would he choose? Mr. Joe Blow CBD, or would they choose Burt's Bees? I think this is going to be a major initiative, even though they just teased it as being something that they're thinking.
It would be nice if we had some true studies of the effectiveness of CBD in terms of what it does best, what it really treats well, what it doesn't treat well. There is a lack of scientific study, in part because a lot of these scientists aren't able to actually work on the stuff.
They don't know how to dose it. I think it's really important that we're going to start. It's going to start coming out. It's not going to be necessarily Juul. But I think it's going to come out that some things it does really work for.
Right.
Now, I am the chief spokesman for the American Migraine.
Yes, you've told me that.
And it does help topically. A lot of people feel that way. My job is just awareness that migraine is a real, actual illness. When I was at my hedge fund and someone said, I have a migraine. I said, well, take two Buffon and get the hell out of here. No, I mean, it's real. And it's CBD is one of the many things that people are trying, of which there's some success, all anecdotal. We do need some. Dr. Gottlieb, who might have been tough one when it comes to Juul, has been very, I think, circumspect about CBD. Doesn't want to regard it as being a cure-all.
You got to get funding for some of these studies, and then people are still coming around. As far as Clorox goes, Jim, between that and Delta, and GoPro to some degree on second-half guidance, I mean, pre-announced season has not been a barn burner.
No, it's not. And GoPro, it's very interesting. There's a very funny piece by Opco, which just says it's not a downgradable offense that they missed so badly. 5 years ago, today, GoPro had an unusual unlocking of insiders. They sold 5.8 million shares, and that was the exact top. I was in Hawaii that day, and I went to a surf store. My stepson likes to surf, and there it was. There it was, a goat with a GoPro.
You tell the story whenever this ticker comes up.
And it was the absolute, even the moment that I saw it, David, if you adjust for the time zone, it was the moment that the stock hit the high, and it's never recovered, and it's still going lower. There's the chart.
Yeah,
see the chart? That was when I saw the goat. See that? That's where I saw the goat.
I remember
with the goat.
You told us. You said I saw a goat.
I said it's time to sell. It was time to sell. That was maybe, blind squirrel finds nuts.
It's never really been time to buy since. I mean, there was obviously a decent rebound for a bit.
You're right. It's been, I think it's been a suboptimal
performer. It wasn't a media company. It was a device company.
It had an ecosystem knot. Remember the Hero ecosystem?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd rather have a Philadelphia
have
Hero.
Verticals on YouTube where you can watch people play golf.
It had it all.
There's the opening bell. S&P 500 at the CNBC Real-Time Exchange at the big boy Dutch insurance company.
Good company.
At the NASDAQ, Viela Bio, a biotech focused on treatments for autoimmune and severe inflammatory diseases.
Well, everybody's negative, and you got to absorb the selling. What I'm looking for is, when do we start getting bifurcated and we buy the Pepsis and the Proctors and recognize that not everything's going down, buy domestic. But I think both you guys are right to put, you can't be an ostrich about tariffs. You just can't be. And the president's so excited about slapping tariffs on Europe, he's joyous. He's joyous. He regards it as a win. That's not what Wall Street wants.
All kinds of crazy second derivatives. Today, the Scottish government comes out and says, see, we can't rely on a U.S. trade deal with the U.K. to offset a Brexit fallout.
Boy,
because now we have tariffs on Scottish single malt.
Boy,
so there's all, it's weird to have a Trump argument in the Remain camp. But this is going to have all kinds of consequences.
It does. Diageo has really fabulous. Diageo's been hurt. Diageo's been a great stock because of the weakness in the pound, Brexit. But I don't know. I may have to go to Wilf for that because it might be. Scotch could be a Lagard. Lagard.
Okay.
You ever watch this show periodically?
I don't know what you're talking about.
He says Lagard.
No. Oh, a laggard.
Christine Lagarde.
Queens. Yeah, you thought it was Sarah Eisen. Congratulations, Sarah Eisen.
Yes.
You thought it was Christine Lagarde.
Yes, I didn't have any idea.
You had no idea.
But then again, actually, I usually do know. I try and translate
I know, but because
else.
Of the podcast, you try to stump people. They're saying, what is he doing right now? Has he got his arms akimbo?
Akimbo. By the way, speaking of... speaking of, I don't know what, Tesla shares down over 4% this morning.
They made a lot of cars. On it.
They did. They delivered 97,000 vehicles in the third quarter. That was slightly below what management had guided towards. But let's sort of say it was in line. But they're going to have to deliver about at least 105,000 in this current quarter to hit the low end of their estimate for what they would deliver overall. And there was this downgrade from JMP. A market perform. They had been an outperform. I thought the most interesting part of it is they yesterday's announcement was the first time since covering the stock we found ourselves wondering whether demand growth for Tesla's cars might be leveling off.
Well, I mean, look, we don't have any tweets, so what do we have to base it on?
Deliveries.
No, but I'm saying he doesn't tweet anymore. He
can't be
in the face.
Most of the deliveries, obviously, were the Model 3.
Seriously, I mean, typically he would tweet that demand is going to pick up really big in the first quarter. I mean, he used to give us some pizzazz. Now we're actually stuck with the facts.
Yes.
The facts.
Yes. This analyst had been using a 15 times EBITDA multiple on 2020 estimates, and now they're wondering whether that, in fact, should be the case if demand is leveling off. We've talked for a long time about the prospect of some competition for the Model 3 and for some of the other models as well.
Right.
From some other makers who are moving aggressively into the
BMW
area. BMW, right? But, the tax credits away.
Yeah, look, I think it's a once wonder stock that has really just become, well, it's not like GM and Ford, but I mean, people just don't talk about it as the $2,000 stock anymore.
Oh, it's lost.
Been dead money for 5 years.
Well, yeah,
yeah. But you remember when it was like, you know, people had such high hopes that it was going to be the next, like, you know, Ford. You know,
it was based on more than just automobiles, of course. I mean, let's not forget they do own SolarCity. That's a part of this company that has slowed. That business to a certain extent, but you did have this idea of batteries becoming a huge potential market for them, the ability to take in energy, store it.
Right. But he's just not bragging. Because he's not bragging, there's nothing to hang your hat on.
So you think that his no longer using Twitter to promote is having a real impact on the stock?
Absolutely. And I think that one of the reasons why I said that the case would be so important is because this guy didn't play by the rules. I happen to like him very much, but he got very excited about his product, and there was enthusiasm. Look, I don't think that's wrong. There was tremendous enthusiasm generated by him, and now it's just kind of like, he was able to get you excited about the battery, get you excited about China. There's no cheerleader-in-chief anymore. I think it hurts.
Wow.
And I got to tell you, you want to know who doesn't have cheerleader-in-chief but was done today by Deutsche Bank is Google, Alphabet.
That's a crazy price target increase. Yes,
wasn't that
$1,475 to $1,600?
And listen to Senator Warren; they're talking about some of the parts. It's almost as if it's kind of. I think it's like gearing up for a Warren president, because they say that. Listen, if you take a look at the cloud business, it's worth a huge amount of money away from the rest of the company because of LeBron James. That's what they call Thomas Kurian, who's the guy who runs cloud now. This is a piece that's called Cloud Comeback Story. It's a very positive piece. It's really positive.
Speaking of positive, Jim, your semis are going to help lead today.
Well, where's Micron? That's all that matters. Yep. I've been saying that if Micron bottoms, that's the, you know, Micron sells, of course, at 7x earnings. Micron destroyed the semis. The stock was 51. A lot of the analysts got very, very excited. I was not one of them, please, the people on Twitter who keep accusing me. And Micron then went to 41, where if you remember when Sanjay Mehrotra was on our show, the CEO, this is where he implied that the buyback would be. I know people don't think buybacks matter. They're wrong. He's got about $7 billion in buying power, and I think he's standing there.
KLA, Micron, Western Digital helping out today.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll watch that.
Jim, did want to mention a name that you know well. You've had the CEO on Mad
Constellation
Money.
Brands?
No, Zoetis. Zoetis having
he's
a leadership
retiring.
Change. Yes, Juan Ramon Alexis.
Oh, I thought that was so sad.
Retiring.
He's so great.
He is being succeeded by Kristen Peck,
you know,
who's been a long-time executive.
We should have Bob Peck on this morning.
I think he is on today, in fact.
There you go. Mind readers.
Yes, she is married to Bob Peck, a frequent
and guest she will
of ours,
be sensational.
CNBC. She's a long time, obviously. She's been executive vice president, group president of U.S. operations, business development strategy, member of the executive leadership team since it was formed 2012. And
great choice.
There will be a transition at the end of the year. This stock has done very well.
Well,
Juan
Ramon Alikes has taken full advantage of the humanization of pets. They also are by far the best scientists when it comes to whatever flu is out there. And I am excited. I know when I spoke with him today, I was a little bummed because Juan Ramon is such a great guest, and he's just he always, those of us, for instance, who had to suffer through dogs that had to wear the Elizabethan hat, you know the Elizabethan hat?
Yes.
He got rid of that with his, he did. his medicine, got rid of the Elizabethan hat. You don't have to put that on the dogs. I mean, when the dogs walk around Elizabeth, they had to bounce it off walls and stuff, and they're like, you know, like this. Now it's just like, hey, I feel better. Or at least you get the sense that they say that. By the way, cannabis, NVIDIA could not jump on the bed. We put the cannabis on NVIDIA.
Arthritis,
yes. We put the cannabis on the knees, jumping all over the place, right on the bed, right next to it. So you went, there you go. There's some FDA approved.
Yeah. Works for dogs.
See, what I thought you were going to talk about is the fact that Bed Bath looked like it reported a bad number, but when you go underneath...
That's what you thought I was going to talk about?
No, I was just trying to transition that, frankly.
Really?
Yeah, when you look underneath Bed Bath, there was a lot of good, including a very strong end to the quarter. And you know, they're going to name a CEO, and my sources indicate that we're going to be excited and say, you know what? They got someone big. Now, they laughed when I said Wells Fargo could get a good CEO. And now you got Charlie Scharf. What would happen
if
you got a big...
You said that? You really were saying for the longest time they can't get anybody.
All right. Yeah, you're right, kind of. All right, you're right.
Got some wicked price target cuts on Schwab, E-Trade, TD Ameritrade out of Wells. They go from the 50s, Jim, and in TD's case, from 58 to 30, and they do take that to underperform. Schwab and E-Trade, they cut to market perform.
That's devastating, that piece. Devastating because what you started thinking is it really is Robin Hood. Robin Hood is playing with venture capital money. Like Airbnb, which is going to come public, thanks for nothing, just say no. Like what's happened with DoorDash versus Grubhub. When you're playing with that venture capital wampum, look at Domino's versus Yum during this period.
Right.
Domino's used to have they own delivery. But suddenly third-party deliverers are selling, you know, helping all these other guys. So everything that is, when you're up against a venture capitalist, it's disruptive. Robinhood has disrupted this industry like there's, just ripped it into shreds. It's like they took a machete to the industry.
Speaking of a machete, going to an industry, the media stocks, the old line ones that I follow, they just cannot get a bid.
What is that, David?
CBS and Viacom, Discovery, obviously Netflix, not an old media company at all. Fox, Disney even, none of them are really...
What is happening there?
I mean, some of the multiples have come way down for some of these names. I mean, they are trading at historically low multiples.
I know you know Viacom better than anyone. I think you may know one better than Bob Backish, frankly, as the CEO.
We're still waiting for the proxy there, too, just to sort of take a closer look.
Waiting for Godot on that one. When is that thing going to stop going down?
I don't know. That's a great question. That I don't have an answer to.
When, you know what, David? A lot of people always say that the great thing about stocks is they stop at zero.
Right.
My Chapel Trust owns Viacom, and I got to tell you, this is maybe the most painful position since valet. And I don't mean the guy who takes care of this unbelievable Brioni suit.
Viacom is now approaching $9 billion. I mean, it's
$9 billion.
It's bite-sized.
People are throwing around.
It's a bite-sized.
I love Lucy is worth $9
billion. It is amazing the level of multiple. There's a lot of concern on a lot of fronts. It goes back to the big issues we've been talking about here for so long.
But everyone says it's the golden age.
The nature of cord cutting, fact that it's going to continue to increase. Do you, how you compete with the streaming services that are out there if you are a network and B, have all these other...
And then content.
We mentioned that BAML call on Netflix. Here's their quote. While Netflix has never missed its own guidance two quarters in a row, we flagged the CFO transition as a risk because at this point, Spence Neumann's forecasting abilities remain unproven.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, they're only off by about a gazillion. I don't know. Someone's going to have to... Netflix has become... a real bad stock like Tesla. And I may have to pull it from FANG. I have to come up with a new
one.
That's
not fair. What are you, the Dow Jones? That one didn't do well. Let's kick it out.
What? I came up with FANG. I have every right to be mercurial. I have every right to be as capricious as I'd like to be. Not unlike Wells Fargo.
Dow Jones was notorious for pulling out losers.
I mean, FANG. I got to get Microsoft in. I got to get Microsoft in. GFAM.
Got to get Microsoft in? You should have thought of that when you came up with FANG. You could have gone with FANG.
Well, we didn't know how great Saatchi was going to be. It's pre-Saatchi. I came up with a pre-Saatchi. GFAM. We got to get Netflix the hell out of FANG. I got to tell you that right now. I don't know how to do it.
By the way, could be a bottom. That happens every time with Dow Jones, too.
Do you remember what I did? I picked FANG, what I said?
What'd you say?
White FANG. Like White Claw, which is so hot.
I was going to say, let's do, you want to do Constellation really quick before we get to Bob?
Yeah, you know, here I see a little slowdown in Modelo Especial, which is the hottest beer in the country. But the main thing is, it's the canopy. you know, it's again, it's CBD strike. Whenever CBD strikes, it crushes. And I think that, you know, they're marking the market to Canopy. I'm going to look, I'll speak to Bill Newlands tonight. And this is still the fastest growing beer company. Wine was just okay. But, you know, Canopy, they spend so much money. And what did they get? It's not clear. And especially if Burt's Bees comes in. Canopy.
But you like the Canopy deal.
Well, I said if you wanted to own. Well, I liked it until Bruce Linton spent a lot of money, and they bought that acreage. I didn't think that was a good deal.
Right.
The only profitable cannabis company is Aphria, which is run by
our friend
Simon.
Thank you. Yeah. Right.
So, I mean, the problem here, Irwin Simon from Haines. The problem is that no one's been able to monetize it because it's still illegal in a lot of states. I know I have to move on, and that's because someone in my ear says to move on. But what's really difficult is to try to build a model when you don't know what state, you know, can you sell it here? Can you sell it there?
Massachusetts also, that's been a real problem.
Local towns
and the concern
can stop
is,
dispensaries.
Frankly, that you're banning, and the cannabis that seems to be hurting people is black market, and right. You're pushing more people into the black market by banning overall, including the ones that actually are state certified and...
Couldn't be more right,
David. Are not going to hurt you.
David, unlike when I say things, you could not be more right.
That's why I say so few things.
Dow is down 32. S&P's basically flat. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Bob?
And sort of an indeterminate opening today. Some stock sectors that are trending downward, continuing to trend downward. Just take a look at the sector. Semi's having a good morning. NVIDIA's doing well. Micron's doing well. Consumer staples is your real heart of the markets right now. But banks, the yields... drifting lower again, folks, after 2 weeks moving up. The last couple of weeks, yields are down. Banks have been drifting lower. Energy, forget about it. Oil's drifting lower, too. That's moving down. And even retail, after a brief rally a month ago, it's also tending to drift lower. So thing we're watching out for is what's the consumer and what is the state of the consumer? We want to see, obviously, the ISM non-manufacturing at 10 o'clock. We're going to see the jobs report tomorrow. We're all looking for some idea about what's been going on here. You'll notice, of course, the industrial end of the economy and the global economy has been a lot weaker, and the stock market is reflecting that. So autos have been weak. Steel's been terrible. Electronic manufacturers have really been weak for a while. The conglomerates, that's the GE and the 3Ms and the Honeywells, they've been weak for the last few. These are 3 months here. Industrial machinery stocks here, Ingersoll, Rands, Dovers, those guys, they've been weak. Steel stocks have been weak because the autos have been weak. So the industrial side of the stock market is really weak, but the consumer side is really doing much better. And that's why, you know, people are pretty happy because the consumer is 70% of the economy. So home building stocks have been strong. Food retailers have been strong. Consumer electronics are generally up. Personal products. You get the idea. The consumer side is holding up very well, and the stock market is reflecting that strength. Also, the consumer staples have been really strong. We've been noting all for the last several weeks now how much Procter & Gamble's up 30% for the year, Walmart 20%, double-digit gains for Kimberly-Clark, PepsiCo. Great numbers this morning overall. Very good organic revenue growth there. Hope you heard Hugh Johnston talking to Jim earlier. Good note, Pepsi's trading up. Coke's a little bit underperforming, up 12%. But you get the point. The consumer staples are really holding up the market right now. That's why we want to watch the big guys, the companies that have had big gains this year. And I'm talking about Costco, Home Depot, Starbucks, Nike, Ross Stores, all up 20 to 30%. They've been holding up very well. You want to watch for any signs of weakness there. Today, indeterminate. Starbucks, a little bit of weakness in the last month, down 10, maybe 12%. That's about the only one that's showing some signs of cracking right now here. Other thing I would watch is some kind of technical breakdown. You want to watch the 200-day moving average for the S&P 500. That's 2839 right now, 2839 here. And you can see we're way above that with 2890. So we've got a good 50 points to go. That's probably what the most important thing everybody is watching. Finally, you want to watch the earnings commentary. We're going to get them very fast beginning October 15th. That's when J.P. Morgan, a lot of the banks, Wells Fargo report, Johnson & Johnson that day, next day IBM, and then the ones I love, the big global industrial names, your Honeywells and Textron, 2 days after that. In a couple of weeks, we'll have a much better idea about fourth quarter guidance, which is what everybody's caring about right now. Dow's just up. No, excuse me. That was down 19 points down. Carl, back to you.
All right, Bob. Thank you very much. Market PMI, not too bad at 51. Everybody, though, holding tight ahead of ISM services. Let's get to Rick Santelli. Rick?
Yeah, there's a lot of different metrics out there traders like to use, but we know the one at top of the 10 is what we're waiting for. That ISM number, I can already see it moving markets a bit. We're starting to get a little buying of treasuries, keeping us at the low end of the range. Look at a four-day chart of two-year note yields. A couple things should jump out at you. First of all, here we are at 145. Open the chart up to September of 2017. That was the cycle low comp. In other words, on the 5th of September, we traded a close of 143, which took us back to September of 2017. And now we're what? 2 basis points away from that? Very significant with all the big data points coming out over the next 24 hours. If you look at the July 2016 historic all-time low in tens around 136, you see on the far right, early September, we had a 146 cycle low close. We're hovering 11 basis points above that. There's your steepener. We have steepened out to about 12 basis points. We're starting to give a little back. We are underperforming a little bit today on the long end. Short end's down one or two. The long end's down two or three. We want to monitor that, especially that dynamic in front of the numbers. And finally, there's been so much talk about what's going on with regard to securities markets, yields moving lower, how that, of course, reinforces and goes back and forth in a feedback loop with the weakness in equities. But Barclays' high yield index spread is still tame, even though it definitely has been rising, as you see. Now, you see the spike on the far left of that chart. Of course, that was the fourth quarter of last year. To give you some kind of perspective, we all know that when interest rates now move lower in the world we live in, it definitely starts to flash a little bit amber, and you are starting to see bits of that in the high-yield sector. Carl, David, Jim, back to you.
See in a few minutes. When we come back, Goldman's chief U.S. equity strategist David Kostin is here. We'll find out how he thinks we should navigate these markets, which have been increasingly volatile as we move into Q4. Dow is down 23. We're back in a moment. S&P gainers are since the beginning of the month. Obviously, McCormick with the outstanding day the other day. Lennar has a slew of price target increases from at least six banks this morning. We'll get stock trading with Jim in a moment. Dow's down 26. Time for Jim and Stop Trading.
When the economy gets weak, we tend to look at supermarkets, which, by the way, now Walmart is the biggest, and things like Kroger. But Kroger has been under pressure, whether it be from Amazon, Whole Foods, or whether it be from Target, which has a big supermarket with grocery, or, of course, Dollar Tree or Walmart. Today, my sources indicate that they had cut 1,600 people district coordinator level to try to get the table of employment better, and the stock's still down. And it just shows you that no matter what you do, if you're a big unionized national chain and you're going up against a Walmart, it doesn't matter. I thought this was a very positive move, but Kroger, doesn't matter. Just doesn't matter.
Wow. It's already a tough margin business.
It is a very tough margin business. It's a dicey day. Obviously, we're 4 minutes away from a number that could make me sound foolish, so I will not give predictions. But I do have Bill Newlands on tonight. So let's find out what Constellation's up to.
Okay, I look forward to that.
Do you?
Yeah, absolutely. Last night you were spraying mustard at everything, weren't you?
Yeah, it was French's mustard, yeah. McCormick. I had to stab it with because it was Colonel Mustard with the knife.
Yes.
In Clue. You don't have a clue, do you? You have a clue? You've been listening to the opening bell on CNBC's Squawk on the Street.